Hello and welcome to episode 133 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. We don't have a feature this week because we're still in between formats. However, we've got a buttload of other things to discuss in varying levels of detail.
A buttload?
A buttload.
We like butts.
And I cannot lie.
You other brothers.
No. Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cookie.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid.
What happened there, Cookie?
As ever, you can find notes for this episode, because we will link to news stories that we discuss, at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. If you want to tweet us right now, do so at nerdspodcast. If for some crazy reason you want to email us, you can do so at contact@nerdsassemble.co.uk. Don't forget to watch the Star Wars films this coming weekend, because next week we will be looking back at them, but you need to watch them in a particular order, the Machete Order.
Machete.
In which we have previously described, and we will be linking to again on the site, but it essentially involves not watching them in release order or the order that they're meant to be ascribed to.
Chronologically
in the canon. It also misses out Phantom Menace. So it's a great way to watch the films.
That's a shame.
Well, is it just over 2 hours of your life that you will save?
Yeah. So it's a good deal, and we're hoping Paul and me to watch it Sunday, I think, because we've got stuff going on Monday before we actually record the podcast. But yeah, if you want to join in,
that involves Supernatural.
It does not involve Supernatural.
It's my brother's birthday, and we've been asked to socialise.
God bless him. Happy birthday.
For next week. His birthday's on May 4th.
So. His birthday's on Star Wars Day?
Yeah.
That's cool. Oh, bless him. Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday to your brother, Dean Winchester.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
Is he more of a Sam?
I don't know at this point. Matt keeps coming to the house when I'm like partway through an episode. It's like, and sort of like seeing it a bit, and I'm like, do you want to borrow the DVDs? He's like, I'll think about it. But anyway,
it's a very polite way of saying no.
I think we need to talk about one of the hugest bits of news to hit.
The hugest.
Yep. Just because this is a podcast does not mean that I have to talk correctly at all, because we're not the BBC.
And just because you've got an MA in professional writing does not mean that you can talk.
Exactly, because writing is different to talking. I'm not going to start using...
Although reading makes our speaking English good.
Yes, much good.
Buffy quote there, by the way.
Okay, so the biggest news to come out the past week is the fact that Konami officially announced the canning of Silent Hills today. It was been speculated over the past week, and it was confirmed today, and I was looking forward to this game. I don't think was it PT trailer thing, that is that even available on PS4 anymore?
It's been
taken off, drawn today, wasn't it?
Get on there now.
Get on.
I tried earlier to grab it, even though I don't have a PS4, but you know, yes, I own that, so I can download it later.
I could find it.
It was like an interactive trailer that was a taster for the game, and yeah.
which was almost universally loved.
Yes.
And people were, just as a teaser, it's one of the best horror films.
Was it Norman? You know,
sort of homages in the game that we've seen.
The visage of and voice acting talent of Norman Reedus, which is the guy that plays what's his face in Walking Dead.
Daryl
in Walking Dead. He was kind of being touted to play basically the main protagonist of the game, and that's off. Obviously, Guillermo del Toro was meant to be like one of the main creative forces behind it. Obviously, contracts haven't been renewed, and Kojima's out the freaking door anyway. And Konami decided also today was the day they delist themselves from, was it the New York Stock Exchange?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's all looking good for Konami.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, considering that
rock and roll,
they haven't been fab for releases for a while. Yeah, it's kind of like they're drawing in on themselves and just kind of
stabbing themselves in the chest.
I know that has slightly difficult cultural associations with them being a Japanese company.
Okay, hanging themselves.
it's all very weird.
Was it Konami that helped develop and publish? Because are they the Dynasty Warriors?
No.
No, that's Temco. No. That's fine. Temco's fine. But Konami's, so Konami's in a weird place right now.
Konami
where,
had Castlevania.
Yeah, Castlevania.
And obviously Sun Metal Gear.
And Metal Gear.
Rocket Knight Adventures.
But then again, it was people like Kojima that were helping to push things like AAA development there. And now it seems that they're just bowing out of AAA, and it's kind of weird.
It's hard.
I mean, is it because the home market isn't good enough or the international market? Because obviously the console market in Japan at the moment, which is what AAA tends, certainly I would have thought in Japan, previously kind of relied on, is tanking at the moment because mobile gaming and obviously handheld consoles are a lot more popular at the moment, whereas home consoles aren't. So I don't know if that's one of the reasons why they're concentrating on the home market, and they've decided to look at the home market. It's like, they don't like this stuff anymore. We're just going to switch things. And they have, how was it, those thingy, I can't call them arcade machines, but those weird sort of like game machines, almost like what we get in our arcades but aren't video games. They do a lot of those.
Japanese publishers have got a very, to me, odd attitude that they go very insular when things are
a bit tits up.
A bit tits up. So they go, Japan only. And say, they're Japanese companies, yes, but you wouldn't find a British games company going British only, because that would be a bit commercial suicide.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that the British game scene is much closer to the American game scene than Japan is to, or Japanese game scene is close to the. So I can, if you know how to do a type of game that appeals to people in your country, and you've taken so many risks about doing a type of game that appeals more towards a international audience, and you're finding that the international audience is no longer being there, then you are going to focus
on the stuff that
you know.
But the thing is that the international audience for Metal Gear and Silent Hill has been pretty huge for a while, and it's still very, very vocal, still buying stuff. So it's, but then again, those are Kojima things, and Kojima's now complete. Traces are pretty much removed now from everything. Yeah,
they removed his logos off his off the website a month ago.
You have to wonder, really, if there's a reason he's going. If they were just trying to more or less everything on
usurp him.
And his studio, and he's just like, no, I'm not, I'm wanting to do other things. And they got, no, you have to do these things. And they say, yeah, let's not. And that's why everything's kind of falling apart.
I think the weather's just going a little bit crazy outside. It's not Silent Hills type weather yet, but...
But it will be.
And also, Silent Hills was a bit of a crap name.
Yeah. Or maybe it was technically, wasn't it meant to be partially like a reboot, really, anyway, a reimagining?
Yeah.
So, yeah, which would have worked absolutely perfectly with
and it looks
the whole storyline, anyway.
And I don't do horror films, but I was looking forward to that. Sod's Law.
Of course, what they really do need to, get back on their feet is a new Gradius.
How would you do a new Gradius nowadays if it was going to be a AAA?
With pure skill.
I mean, Gradius 5 was brilliant. Mind you, you're going back to PS2 for that.
Seems a long, long, long time ago.
Just going back to Konami games that I've actually enjoyed over the years.
Boo! Gradius.
Well, you didn't enjoy that, or you did?
Vulcan Venture.
I can't remember.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I've got a bunch of Konami
that
games.
That wasn't Konami, was
on
it?
On PS2.
I own the arcade board for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes! Wow. And that was Konami, wasn't it?
That was Konami.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
And they did the X-Men arcade game as well. Mm. That was brilliant.
Okay. Is that, I know that there was a Turtles game on the NES. I think the first Turtles game, which...
but the NES was shit.
Yeah, which was, I think it was Palcom, which is, as far as I can tell from like the history of like gaming and whatnot, Palcom was a subsidiary company of, I think it was Capcom at the time, or something like that. That yep. Basically, because each company was only allowed to release about 7 games per year for the NES. And a way to get around that is basically just creating a shell company. And that I think that was under one of them.
There's a whole rich vein of how stupid Nintendo were and how they were in a lot of ways bad for the market. And why I don't, you know, all these reasons are, you know, amongst the reasons I don't have the, you know, the same kind of nostalgia for them. Certain other people might.
I wonder who.
Hmm.
that's fine.
Be like that with me, you bugger.
No, I mean, when it comes to the consoles, it's like the past is the past. It's got to be. You know, Nintendo have, made some mistakes. You know, I'm willing to admit that. You know,
oh, they made a hell of a lot. Yeah, and that's not just me. You know, kicking
all
Nintendo.
Companies
that's
have
just,
to be fair.
Oh yeah, no company is perfect, as just evidenced by the whole Microsoft being the savior of home consoles. You know, from arrogant Sony. And then look how that turned around.
Mm.
So, no companies.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I think Nintendo made the right decision with sticking with carts for the N64 for several reasons.
I've just been trying to figure
yeah,
out.
That's gotta be a bit
I'm just trying to figure out the Konami games that I've played over the years, mostly.
Dragonfield.
And it was kind of like. It was with like the PlayStation 2 era that I played sort of Konami
Sunset
stuff.
Sunset Riders.
Seven Blades, I played that.
The Simpsons.
Shadow of Memories, oh yeah, I've got good memories about Shadow of Memories, that was a cool little game.
Oh god, they did that bloody Bucky O'Hare game as well. Used to love that.
Looking for the list. Obviously, like, last Halloween last October I played the first 4 Silent Hill games. They gave up on The Room because I thought it was shit. Pretty much.
Okay.
The trailer and the soundtrack were nice, but yeah, I've doubled with the game, and it's just, who the fuck made this?
Oh, God, Sona the Enders is theirs, you know.
Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that wasn't that the full game that came free with the demo of Metal Gear Solid 2?
Yeah.
Sona the Enders.
Yeah.
Because that's how I remember it. That's how I remember everyone else.
Obviously,
treating it.
We've already mentioned Castlevania, but I've only ever briefly played I think maybe sort of PS2 era Castlevania, and I can't remember what it was.
That doesn't count.
Weren't they responsible for the redo of Bionic Commando?
That was Capcom.
No, that was Capcom.
Capcom. Oh.
Obviously, there's Sudoken, which...
Yeah. There again, Capcom haven't been doing that well recently.
Oh, yeah, but
nope.
they've been making an effort.
Yeah, I'm looking down their list, and it's just... Yeah, they struck gold a few. Yeah, Beat Mania. They struck gold a few times with something that just got really popular, and then they just wrung everything.
Well, like Pro Evolution Soccer for like a couple of years. That was the only
Guitar
thing.
Guitar Freaks. Don't remember that one.
Oh my god, they published Saw the video game. I think I'm beginning to. And Def Jam Rap Star.
Paintball Mahjong. Mania in 2005. Everyone remembers that.
Oh, Never Dead.
Mahjong Fight Club 5. Nobody ever talks about it. First rule.
Well, the first rule of Mahjong Fight Club is bring your own pieces.
Yeah, they haven't really had many. I would say that their main standout series that they've put out over the years have been Castlevania, Silent Hill series, Sudoken, did I say Metal Gear already? Frogger, maybe. But, you know, that... I'm trying to think, how many games do I think about when I think about Capcom and think of that? There are more games from Capcom series that I think of more fondly than Konami.
Resident Evil. Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Not that I remember Street Fighter.
I am looking down Devil May Cry. This of, you know, Konami games, and it seriously is, yeah, apart from having Kojima on their payroll, they might as well have just fucked off in the 80s.
We've done
the 80s, that's it, I'm just pissing off.
They did the game based on the Goonies?
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
It was shit. I'm also referring to...
That'll be film, why then.
Because I don't care what? That so many people what? Seem to think that it's amazing. I was never a fan of the Goonies.
Well, you're entitled to your own opinions.
What? Even though it's wrong.
No, I didn't say that. You don't put words in my mouth.
I'm going to move us on now.
Yeah, it's probably the best.
They published Elite 2, which was Frontier.
Ooh, cool.
And other than that, yeah, it's...
Didn't they do Rocket Knight Adventures? I'm sure they did Rocket Knight Adventures with Spark.
Hang on. Yes, they did. In 1993, so 22 years ago.
I played a reboot of that once.
You're welcome.
It was really hard to play, and Paul had to help me play it.
It was good, though. Yeah. It was good fun.
It's funny how you're so... No offense, but you're so terrible at...
platformers.
Like 2D platform games, that you're able to kind of pass it to me. I'd get to grips with it almost instantly and kind of complete it for you.
Yeah, that has happened.
Sometimes it's just what you've been wired by.
Yeah.
I'm wired for strategy and thinking long and hard about what I'm going to use next.
I think it's determined by how you first get into gaming, because Emily was obviously first into gaming from Pokemon.
Yeah.
So that's why you prefer, strategy games and RPGs and stuff.
And I do like action games. As well. But it moves on to the next bit of newsy news. Oh, let's have a look. Should we discuss that interesting bit of Green Party policy hidden on their website that is causing a bit of a hoo-ha in the entertainment industry? Green Party causing hoo-ha in entertainment in part of their manifesto on their website.
It's kind of weird because, I mean, from the left's political left's perspective in the UK, the Greens are like the darlings. They're the people that can get stuff done if, they get voted in. And it's like, no, they do actually have some stuff that people disagree with.
Yeah, the Greens manifesto states that they would like to make copyright shorter in length, fair and flexible, which means that they would introduce generally shorter copyright terms with a usual maximum of 14 years. And that might be, that thinks that's fine. Currently, copyright, certainly for literature and films, depending on, obviously, if you're the writer and various roles like director and stuff, is 70 years after the death of the individual that's essentially created the piece.
Right.
Under this, it would be 14 years after the piece is published or released.
Why 14?
Wait, so not even after 15? The death?
Not even after their death.
Wait, so...
So what? You would be alive, you've written a thing, say you've spent...
And you lose copyright on it.
Yeah, within your lifetime, quite easily. If you consider the fact that The Lord of the Rings took over 20 years for Tolkien to write...
That's just bizarre.
And they say, oh, it's because... what was it they want to do?
Pharaoh living base wage and things like that.
That's not going to make up for loss of... Like, if you consider the amount that adaptations and stuff can make for a creator, it can be more than book sales, basically, if you get something optioned for a film or a TV series.
You would
just have, like, broadcasters or film studios just waiting for the copyright to just run out, and the thing will still be hot. It'll still have a following, and then they won't have to pay for the rights to actually produce the piece. And it's just crazy.
No, that is crazy.
Considering it's an industry I'm partially involved in, it's kind of like, nah, that one policy because you're trying to undermine my ability to make a living.
Bearing in mind that, I mean, if you consider, you know, stuff like Hollywood and whatnot, I know it's kind of, you know, over the Atlantic and everything, but Hollywood can kind of remake stuff like that's, you know, well over 14 years old.
The thing is that
you know, it's going to encourage, you know, people to basically just wait 14 years after date of publication and then do their own...
That's what they do. But the other crazy thing, which they're also not considering, is that it could also mean that companies won't, from other countries, won't want to publish or release stuff here because of until the copyright's gone, but because they will have a shorter period of time from which to make money from item. Just because you've registered it with the Copyright Office in the United States, for which we don't actually have a Copyright Office per se in the UK, does not mean that its copyright is necessarily respected in other countries. So if we changed our copyright policy so drastically from the international norm, it would create a conundrum for anyone wanting to publish here from abroad.
Yeah. I mean,
my first response when I heard that was, that would only make any sense if the rest of the planet did something like that as well.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you've got a situation where the rest of the planet is kind of doing its own thing, and then it's like, it's not going to work. It's just not simply not going to work.
It's not going to work, is it?
I don't quite understand.
The other thing is, it just opens up to abuse after 14 years for movie studios and stuff. Just grab it.
As The Guardian reports, Stella Duffy, a novelist and creator of the Fun Palaces festivals, told The Guardian that protection of copyright gave her a pension. To quote, "I've had two of my novels recently optioned by HBO, and one of them would be just coming up to the end of the copyright term under the 14-year rule," she said. Wow. "That would mean the big corporation could take my work without paying me a penny."
Yeah.
She added, "People think that ending copyright would benefit artists, but it would mostly widely benefit the corporations and distributors. Mm. They don't bat an eyelid when they don't pay authors for a novel, but people will still pay for an iPad or a Kindle to read their work for free." The Green Party, this is according to The Guardian, who we'll quote in a moment, the Green Party said there was a need for systems that would, in quotes, "reward creators, but that are consistent with digital technologies," end quotes. And that technologies to cooperate could be coupled with £500 million more in funding for the arts, as well as citizens' income that would, in quotes, "allow many people to participate in cultural creation." And it's like the issue isn't that... It's like, it's a freaking miracle if you get an advance at the moment for writing a book, but then most of your money will be made up in royalties. But I don't see how you can couple the creative arts with this universal income idea that they want to do in that way if they're going to also scrap having a decent amount of copyright.
I also don't get where they got this 14-year figure from either. I mean, 15 years.
It's just arbitrary, isn't it? It's like
according to a Green Party spokesman said, "We would consult with copyright holders and the general public to establish an appropriate length, but believe copyright terms should be shorter than they are at present in order to reduce restrictions on our shared cultural heritage." The only way you can reduce restrictions on the shared cultural heritage that we have at the moment is if you get get corporations, broadcasters, license holders, distributors, blah, 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 understanding how we live in a globalized society and how this means that people talk about things in different parts of the world at the same time, and that localization, efficient, quick localization, should be a priority, and then getting stuff distributed as quick as possible so that demand can actually be met when it's there. But no, Green Party is just like, no, cutting copyright will solve this.
But I mean, as was quoted by the lady before, you know, sometimes, you know, when you get to retirement age, you're kind of living on, you know, stuff that, the work that you've done. And if the work that you've done is going to be, you know, you're not going to get anything from it for, you know, 14 years.
It kind of doesn't make sense because it's like, so say you were an investment banker. And you've been putting money, you put some money aside 14 years ago in an account that, I don't know, maybe, how long are bonds for? Bonds can be quite lengthy. Maybe it's like a bond that's going to be around for like 20, 25 years or something. But, oh, it'll stop incurring interest after a certain period of time, but you won't be able to act. You know, there's like, if you try to apply that kind of limitation of the things where you've put effort in order to get something back out, the cost of licensing things to the general public isn't what's stopping the general public accessing things. Cutting access to libraries, closing libraries, that's fucking us up in terms of cultural heritage.
Yeah.
You know, not properly upgrading our telecoms infrastructure, probably messing up our ability to access shared cultural heritage. Having really shitty English literature curriculums in our secondary schools is probably fecking up our shared cultural heritage and ability to access it. Writers, artists, filmmakers making money, the people that are actually doing the work, them making money isn't what's holding sharing of cultural heritage. But the Hollywood system, and then perhaps, say, the elitism of the organisations in this country, for instance, that fund British films. I mean, if you want to get funding from somebody like the BFI, because they now oversee most of the main funding, and you have to apply through them, it's a whole kind of weird cultural... social economic situation with the kind of people you're having to convince to give you money for stuff that perhaps, you know, there's gatekeepers in place that stop cultural heritage. But you deal with those issues, not scrapping the ability for somebody to make money from their hard work.
It almost sounds to me like it's something suggested by Amazon. Or something, you know. It's like, you know, wouldn't it be great if all the, you know, these big books that we're having to pay, you know, this stuff for, you know, what if their copyright elapsed in, you know, say 14 years, and we could just sell them, because and then everyone could sell, you know, could buy them super cheap on their Kindles. Wouldn't that be great for our culture? Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to move us on to another controversial story.
Can I just say that from. You know, because if you're a child prodigy or whatever,
yeah,
and you write a book at 17.
No, worst case for scenario, if you're going where I think you're going with this, what if you're a child prodigy and you wrote a children's book at the age of 3? And as a child, you do not own the copyright to your own work until you're an a legal adult. Which means that technically you wouldn't own copyright either till when you're maybe 16 or 18. There's a potential for the copyright of you as a child prodigy for what you've written to run out before you can actually make money off of it as a legally recognised adult. There we go.
That's a messed up theoretical, but what I was going with is if you're like 17 and made something, then by the time that person is 31... then it's in public domain and they have
and then they've got no rights to it.
And of course, if they've done that whole crash and burn path, maybe unfortunately that money coming in from that published item would have been the only thing supporting them as they tried to pick their life back together. Not that I'm painting a desperate picture of creatives, but that kind of does happen at times.
So you've got these nutters of the Green Party trying to do that for 14 years, and then you've got that idiot from UKIP going on about getting rid of Doctor Who.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Because UKIP want to reduce the license fee by 2/3, and stop the BBC from doing entertainment programming. So you certainly wouldn't have any of the kids' channels. You wouldn't have most of the programming on all the other channels. BBC Four might survive in some way in terms of the type of programs.
Yeah, of all of them, of all the channels, that might be the one to survive, and possibly something like BBC Parliament or BBC News.
So basically, UKIP and the Greens are bad for the entertainment industry, which is a weird situation to be in. Both have got shitty ideas for how to deal with entertainment in the UK.
It's two extremes of, you know, one's, you know, far right, one far left.
To be fair, I thought UKIP were totally bonkers before that came out, and they said rid of Doctor Who, and I was just like, Absolute muppet.
It does make me think, though. That would be really good to, you know, basically get going, so like a hashtag, something along the lines of Save Doctor Who. Don't vote UKIP.
With UKIP, I approve of their getting rid of Strictly Come Dancing policy, but when it comes to their getting rid of Doctor Who policy, fuck you, Farage.
Yeah. So, go back
to where you came from, which is the Tory party, for anyone who's confused.
I think we need explanation for our few international listeners at the moment. Yes, we have a general election coming up, and we've got party manifestos flying left, right, and centre. You know, you can't walk, you know, like, I don't know, like a couple of metres or something without being slapped by something political at the moment, even in your own house, because of all the leaflets the fuckers have been posting through the letterbox. But, our election is, just a minute, I'm looking at the calendar. Next Thursday. Okay. Yeah. So
the 7th of May.
Tense times.
Did the Greens still have an anti-GM?
No, it's only a couple of fringe anti-GM members, but I don't know if it's any of the people actually.
Modification for,
I don't know if it's any of the actual election candidates at all across the country that share those views.
Yeah, because that's one of my things with the. Yeah. I have no problem with GM. Mm. I do have a problem with companies like Monsanto who do GM.
Well, yeah,
but it's like the actual GM itself. Yeah, we've been doing it for thousands of years with selective breeding.
I need to call this back. Controversy last week erupted
like a bit of rope
over developers. And the Steam community at large being told that Steam is thinking about having paid mods on the Steam Workshop. And then not long after that announcement last week, I think I heard about it on Saturday, Skyrim UI said that they were going pay to play. So, paid mods, paid for mods, good, bad, depends on the situation. Anybody?
It depends, but most of the time, piss off.
There we go. It would be so bad if it weren't for the fact that Steam Workshop doesn't work very well at the moment. I mean, the amount of times where I've had to give up trying to use Skyrim mods, for instance, through it, because it just doesn't handle them properly, and I've had to go and deal with the files on a sort of individual level and actually go through my own hassle of sorting out the DAT files and stuff. It's probably more than half the mods that I use on Skyrim, and that's a lot of mods, I want to add. I wouldn't have been, you know, so pissed if the thing actually currently worked.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though, you know, when you're installing mods, you know, you're kind of hopeful that it'll work, but a lot of the times you're downloading stuff and it either corrupts the game, makes it unplayable, or it doesn't do what it's meant to. And it's like, well, how do you get a refund for stuff that doesn't work that's meant to?
But obviously the modding community's been built on a lot of goodwill over the decades.
Yeah.
So to suddenly be like, oh yeah, you could charge for this stuff. And it's like, well, that's... And also, obviously, if you've got modders suddenly being able to charge for the mods, obviously, technically, they're building it off stuff of intellectual property that isn't theirs. Mm. So if you're a game developer or publisher and you're not happy about the idea of other people making money from your game, say it's part of a series, so say Bethesda aren't happy about the idea of in future you could make money off of stuff to do with their IP, well then they'll probably get rid of the ability for you to mod those games.
Or what's worse, what could happen is that the developers themselves will actually start taking a profit from your mods, and
they already do.
But then they can actually turn around and say, right, well, you can't actually distribute your mods for free because it's using our game and we're not making money off it.
Well, the
which means that you're not going to have any free mods whatsoever.
The situation as is that there's a profit split between Valve, the modder, and whoever's game the mod is for. So, you know, automatically, you know, two of these parties, you know, will profit from it. Now, when it comes to the idea of paid mods, if you've got something that adds phishing to Mirror's Edge, as an example, you know, just, you know, something that wasn't there before, is it, yeah, because, you know, when I was playing, you know, game X and it didn't have phishing in, I was really annoyed and I would pay for that. No, I wouldn't. If it's, you know, just something that's, you know, a tiny little feature, I can't really see the point. If you're talking about full conversions like there have been for Oblivion and Skyrim, then I can kind of see that. Or the projects where modders are trying to get, say, Oblivion running in the Skyrim engine or Morrowind running in the Skyrim engine, I can see, you know, that being the kind of thing that I would, you know, slap down money for.
But armor for horses?
Yeah, armor for horses, which is what it usually boils down to. It's like, no.
I mean, it's kind of weird how we're seeing, like both in this and, say, for example, people who earn money from YouTube on, you know, Let's Play videos and whatnot, how people are starting to kind of think of kind of playing games and altering games as a job. And it's like, you're not using your intellectual property. And you're kind of doing this thing where it's like, it's not really a job because you don't have a set wage either. What you're doing is basically making money from a hobby.
Another issue with the, say, the
which
whole,
is not necessarily bad, but
the other issue with the modding situation is obviously, like, to a degree, obviously, actual games developers and publishers will test their product before general release.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is a ascribed level of quality control already going on, or quality assurance. Whereas with mods, you know, like, as soon as money gets involved, there is, like, is there going to be enough testing? You know, it's software as a service kind of dealios in a way. You know, the mod's going to be kept up to date? What if the game updates and breaks the mods? The mods, you know, this thing I've paid for, is it going to get updated?
What happens if somebody copies another person's mod?
Well,
mods a mod.
Well, the thing there was, there was a, I think it was possibly a phishing mod for Skyrim, which is, you know, what I thought of, you know, phishing.
Yeah.
And it used another mod's idle animations without permission. So already there's been a, you know, a paid for
mod. I wonder if that's the phishing mod I use. I use a phishing mod. You could basically sort of like, If you're sensible, because it could take a while to fish, you've got Frostfall going, so you set up a tent. And you sort of sit in the tent with the line just outside, just waiting for it to fish. I don't use dwarven rods for fishing in Skyrim. It's a bit overkill. You're basically throwing explosives into water.
Which is a sort of despot method of fishing, isn't it? It's just grenade.
But in essence, you know, it's a developer releases a game which gets mod, which they gets mods, which gets, you know, their money. It's like, surely the company should actually be creating tools so that more people can mod.
I mean, part of it is obviously it's going to be tying in with Steam Workshop, and there are tools associated with that. Anyway, I think it's like, as we've said, we're happy to pay for content if it's good and it works. The issue for me is, you know, what happens when it stops working? Where does the buck stop? You've paid for a service, suddenly the service is no longer working.
Yeah,
what then?
Of all the mods I can think of that I've, you know, played about with games, I can't think of that many that I would be prepared to actually lay down money for.
I mean, something like say, for instance, the Frostfall mod for Skyrim, for instance, is probably something that would be worth paying for, because it adds a lot of functionality and it completely changes the gameplay experience when enabled. But at the same time, it was kind of like, it was a feature that really should have been in Skyrim because it was there in Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, the whole sort of like idea of exposure and not eating and stuff being an issue.
There's a lot of mods that have come out for the, you know, the Elder Scrolls games, which are basically fixing what should have been there in the first place.
We'll just put in a little fun little twist, like Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think in a way this story is kind of making me feel a bit of cognitive dissonance, because I'd consider myself in D&D terms kind of lawful good. So in a way you're kind of a you know, altering other people's IP and whatnot, but you're getting money for it. And yeah, it's
yep. Then they also get money for it, which
Which means that I can't necessarily see a downside, but the fact that you're basically going into the files and altering it still making me feel a bit like it's
like you're hacking into it.
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of cognitive dissonance on my part. But
I haven't had a game PC for years, but when I did back in the day, I think the best mods I ever played, and this is going back some, was on Battlefield 1943.
Oh, yeah.
Which was one of the first Battlefields out, and they actually came out with a Star Wars mod, which, funnily enough, looked a bit like Battlefront when it finally hit the shelves. They had a G.I. Joe mod for it, which was good fun. They had a Battlestar Galactica mod, which was good fun as well. And then they did something daft like My Little Pony mod, which wasn't as fun. But certainly the first three I would have probably paid a bit of money for, I must admit, because it gave you whole new maps and everything. And that was good. That was really like my first taste of DLC to a degree, I suppose.
I mean, I'm going back, you know, when it goes to mods, because there were, say, you know, the Arkanoid-type games, which were hacked. Mm. The pirate versions on the 8-bit. And, you know, you could say, well, those were mods. There were things like Boulder Dash Construction Set, where people made collections of their, you know, entirely original caves and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into things like, I'm pretty sure there were mods for the original Wolfenstein 3D. And, of course, Doom and Duke Nukem 3D were the ones that, you know, really, you know, kicked off the, you know, the mod movement on, you know, on PC. Yeah. And most of those were free. And they were pretty much just a way of people experimenting. So I'm not sure about the, I will do a quick mod and I will charge for it. Hopefully it will settle down and this won't be an issue.
Mm.
I'll be happy with that if a great mod comes along, you know, and you know you can buy it, then fantastic. But if someone wants to kick stuff out for free, just because they're enjoying it or they think you know something needs changed, and you know if lots of people use it, then you know that's the only you know thing they're really bothered with, then great. But yeah, as soon as I heard about it, it was just I can see issues.
Yeah. Well, I think to a certain extent, because modders are usually either, you know, individual people or just, you know, a small group, I think you're going to have modders that actually start rising up the ranks, as it were. So you're going to have, you know, you've downloaded a really good mod from this one person. You're going to start looking for their mods, you know, from now on type thing.
That's kind of what's happened cool. anyway.
Sorry?
That already happens.
Mm.
And then, of course, I will look forward to the first time that someone tries to charge money for a nude mod.
I'm going to move
because you know it's going to happen.
I really want to.
The Sims 3 one that never worked.
I really want to move us on now to another news story. I say news story. It's a collection of news stories. The Avengers Age of Ultron came out in the UK last week. And obviously there's been a lot of press over here trying to get people to go see it and stuff. But the thing is that not all the press for Avengers Age of Ultron in the UK and its EU release has been particularly fabulous. There's been a few controversial situations, such as when Christian Guerin Murphy from Channel 4 News decided to question Robert Downey Jr. about his previous issues with drugs and family life. And then there was that point where Jeremy Renner and Chris Evans may have said some less than flattering things about Scarlett Johansson's character, the Black Widow. During an interview with Digital Spy. Oh, and then there's that whole thing where, like, Disney decided they wanted to increase their cut from ticket sales for Avengers Age of Ultron in German cinemas, and one German cinematic chain has been like, fuck you, we're not showing the film, which affects over 600 cinemas in Germany. So, you know, it's all good.
It's not the best of starts, is it? Ultron's already victorious.
Hey, what?
Said Ultron is already victorious.
Are you trying to...
causing chaos.
Chaos. Death and destruction.
Could be causing KO.
Chaos.
Sorry?
So, yeah, it's just kind of like... it's just gone a bit mad, really.
It's been a really weird sort of... what's the word? Film promo.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, backfired in a few bits, really.
There has been rumours that I hope is true that the DVD version is going to get basically like an extended ending. Cut, an alternate ending. Which, having seen it, I wouldn't be
surprised.
Oh, and there was like that fabulous point during some other point where Joss Whedon was, I assume, either talking about the film or promoting the film or something, and just made comments about Agent Coulson and his lack of presence still in the cinematic universe, and saying various things that peeved off a bunch of producers on either side of the TV programs and the films, and made things awkward. Didn't like it being made awkward. I mean, I was actually wondering, you know, why did Coulson... because it's not a spoiler, it's because he's not in Age of Ultron. He's not there.
Aww.
And it's kind of like Whedon was like, oh, well, there's no point in bringing him back to the cinematic universe because his death was what brought everyone together in Avengers Assemble. And it was just kind of like, yes, but... you've been made, like, not you personally, Whedon, but certainly between the honchos at the film end of things and the honchos at the TV end of things, you've been making out that the films and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and certainly Peggy Carter, yeah, all in the same universe, same with Daredevil.
Yes.
I mean, you can't really kind of turn around and say, oh, well, why isn't he in there? Why isn't he? I don't think he was necessary. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, sort of like saying, oh, why didn't Iron Man turn up?
Yeah, but
with
it's not that. It's the fact that the characters, the Avengers, are currently unaware of Coulson's continued lively existence.
As far as we know.
They would have said something.
Would they?
They would have said something.
Would they?
Yes.
Would
that, at least if the film was being written properly, they would have done. Because it would have was a major turning point the last time the load of them were, you know, together on screen.
Well, you'd have thought Thor would have known because Lady Sif would have told him.
Oh, yeah, but Thor wouldn't necessarily
actually,
know.
Actually, yeah, because Coulson's been trying to keep it a secret, hasn't he, pretty much? So why would the Avengers know?
Well, no, except not Coulson so much. No, not Coulson so much. More like Fury.
Fury. Well,
yeah.
But Fury's not in charge anymore.
No, but he's still skulking about.
He might be skulking about, but he's still not in charge.
Doing credit card adverts on Hulu.
But I mean, like my, you know, argument is like, well, Iron Man wasn't in with the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, they could have really have done with his help there, but
actually, in all fairness. We've got a review going up this week on the site by, well, I say the site, by on hexdimension.com by one of our writers called Hannah. She watched Age of Ultron last week as well, and she's trying not to spoil things, so it'll be worth checking the review. But she takes much issue with much of film. I also take issue with much of film. I wasn't...
starting to sound like Hulk.
I was not impressed.
Hulk, not impressed.
Hulk's not impressed with...
Didn't you like it?
No. Really didn't like it. No. I rate it lower than Captain America the Winter Soldier, lower than Guardians of the Galaxy, lower than Avengers Assemble, lower than Iron Man 3. Maybe a tiny bit better than Thor the Dark World. Certainly not as good as the original Thor.
Oh dear God.
That's how I felt about it, but then I've seen loads of people...
I actually got told over the weekend that it was nearly as bad as Iron Man 2.
And then I've seen loads of people who've really liked it, and I'm like, I think, I'm not sure if I can...
Well, I mean, there's always going to be some people out there that like it, and there's going to be some people that don't like it, all for different reasons. So there's no point in.
Yeah.
You know. I will raise the question. Maybe you're having kind of my reaction to the original.
Okay.
Mm. And maybe your opinion will change on a rewatch after a little while, because if I may remind people, I really did not like Avengers Assemble to start off with, and then I rewatched it, and.
And this, for me, because it's more of a lot of it is actual structural stuff of it as a film, like on its at its foundations, I've found issues.
But I mean, the original cut of the film was meant to be over 3 hours, and obviously they crammed it down to get it into the cinema. So I'm really, really hoping that we're going to get a proper extended edition, like out on DVD or Blu-ray.
I think before, because I think we need to move on, but just dropping a tiny bit more Marvel news. Before we move on to some one last bit of proper news, Marvel is teaming up with Telltale on a new episodic video game series, which will be released in 2017.
Which seems a bit too long. It should be next year.
They haven't said what it is.
Will it be a good game as well as good story?
Of course it will be. It's Telltale.
Kick the Walking Dead Season 1. Kick.
Well, I mean, obviously, Telltale have this reputation for telling really story-driven games well.
Yeah.
There's a sentence in there somewhere.
Absolutely.
But, so I'm kind of wondering, you know, what is kind of some of the lesser action-y type Marvel IPs and whether it will be one of those.
What? Stanley's Chessmaster.
No, you're a reporter at the Bugle. That's what it is. You're not Parker. You're somebody else.
You could be Eddie Brock.
I have no idea.
Oh, college life with the unbeatable Squirrel Girl. That would work. And you just occasionally have to fight bad guys. But most of the time, you have to work your way through awkward social situations and sort of reconcile your love of crafts with the fact that squirrels and wool do not mix.
So you're trying to say that a scene in which Squirrel Girl thwacks Galactus and then goes home, and then in the top left-hand corner, Galactus will remember that.
Yes, yes. That would be absolutely perfect.
Thinking, you know, you could work on, you know, the Smallville Gazette after Superman leaves town. So there's basically absolutely nothing that happens in, you know, in this small town, and occasionally you try and link.
I have the feeling that you've just enraged a load of fans there.
Arse end of nowhere, and something happens in Metropolis again, but it's got not really to do with us, but we're trying to link it in a really tenuous way. And I'm not at all thinking of the local news and star. Tries all the time.
I mean, it made sense doing a Telltale game based off the Fables comic books from Vertigo, because a lot of that doesn't involve fighting. It involves dialogue and talking your way through things. And even the Walking Dead comics involve a lot of talking and trying to think your way through things.
And don't forget Game of Thrones.
And Game of Thrones, the same. Marvel comics have tended always towards what mainstream comics do, which is smashy, smashy, fight, bit of tits and ass, and more smashy, smashy, fight. Oh, we put words in to express emotions occasionally a bit more now, but those don't help us solve the situation, in which really words probably could have solved the situation better, because we always have to go smashy, smashy, fight.
Hulk feeling Hulk feel conflicted about going smashy, smashy, fight.
Exactly, but they won't do that, you know.
Maybe it'll be Howard the Duck.
I'd read that.
Oh, do you know what would be a good one? If it was like a case where, I don't know, like She-Hulk was representing the prosecution, and because, mind you, she's defending, but anyway, and Daredevil's defending or something, and it was the court case. There we go. Cool. Yeah.
So the Marvel equivalent of Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, there, that will work. It's just that there's hardly any storylines where people or characters don't end up hitting something. It's like you can't easily do a game about storytelling and subtlety and making decisions that don't involve fists, so as to progress the story.
idea.
Unless it was a story based on Fitzsimmons.
I was just thinking, you know, a very mundane job in the, you know, superhero universe. You could be Marvel's news agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
actually, imagine doing a Watchmen Telltale game, and it's from the perspective of that newsstand that features throughout the comics.
Now, it would be nice if we had a Watchmen game that didn't suck.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
One last bit of sort of comicsy related news, and the last bit of news I think we've really got time for this week is that last week, Batman Dark Three was announced. Batman Dark Knight 3 with Frank Miller at the helm again.
I didn't even know there was a 2, to be honest. I didn't know there was a Dark Knight 2.
Yeah, you've got the Dark Knight Returns, the Dark Knight Strikes Again, and now we're going to have the Dark Knight 3, and it's Miller, and it's Miller post going a bit kind of,
a bit right-wing maniac?
Yeah, so it's just kind of like, yeah, I could get excited for this, or I could not, because things are a bit weird with him these days.
What's the title of this series?
It's just the Dark Knight. It's like it's on its own little corner of DC Universe. It's not main universe at all.
I think that's a weird thing with Batman, because, I mean, is there like the ability to almost like pick and choose what you feel is canon? Or is like everything canon?
No, it's not. Everything is canon. I mean, it's all tied
everything
in with
everything is canon.
It's all tied in with how things go, what comes out of their various crises. And the Dark Knight Returns and the Dark Knight Strikes Again aren't really canon, but God, are they weird to read?
So it's pretty much a case of, well, you cannot bother and still get the full Batman experience.
Yeah. I can't. I don't really want to talk about this more. Other than the fact that it looks like it's going to be an 8-issue miniseries that Miller's co-writing with Brian Azzaro, who's worked on Wonder Woman and 100 Bullets.
Cool.
There's going to be artists. Yeah,
someone will moderate his budget.
Hopefully. So, what have people been up to? I think that's the next important question.
Metroid? Elite?
Yeah. on and off. I've also been cat-sitting, so my game-playing time has been drastically cut down, because I've been having to walk several miles up to the in-laws' house and then sit there shouting at the TV because sci-fi. I have been either cutting Star Trek Next Generation episodes or showing the acts in the wrong order, which was a highlight of last week.
Oh, no. Are you cat sitting me out?
Stupid.
Yes. Well, kind of, because you might have heard some meowing earlier, because our little elderly gent, Floyd, walked in and shouted at me a few times. So
shouted?
Well, that's what he does. He just basically walks in and goes, meow.
Oh, could you just imagine if cats learnt to talk? How annoying they would be.
Oh, like, no, they'd have
go out.
They'd have their own podcasts, I'm sure, at this point. It'll be fine. You don't have to use opposable thumbs for most of it. So, yeah, they
I feel like, yeah, fuck those dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
But other than watching really badly put together episodes of The Next Generation, is there anything else you've been up to, Retroid?
I've been watching Daredevil.
Yay!
It is really quite good.
It is very, very good. I love it.
And it does along come Netflix and do this series of a character that I didn't really give a shit about. And I'm really enjoying it, and it's, you know, quite well put together. With, you know, the main bad guy.
Mm.
Kingpin.
Is it Kingpin?
Kingpin.
Yeah. It's never mentioned it yet, you know, so far as I can tell. But I was thinking, yeah, so far as I knew enough.
What episode have you got up to?
That's who
he
probably was. 11.
We're way behind at the moment.
Yeah, we're like halfway through.
Mind you need to watch it more than me at the
moment.
I've been really enjoying that, but my God, it's in comparison to something like Gotham.
Yeah, I've gone off Gotham. I haven't watched it for weeks.
I've been recording episodes and not watching episodes. minutes.
Yeah, so we're probably going to basically just do a blitz through at some point.
Yeah, it's not a bad series. It's just not as well done. And also, could you know speed things up a little bit? Because it's all very
it's
well
the
saying,
same old crime thing every week, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, oh, it, you know, this character, you know, is such and such.
Is this Gotham or...
This is Gotham.
This is Gotham.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, it's just... It's a little bit of a pity.
Part of the problem was that it's, Gotham started out like introducing like so many characters, you know, and then it's kind of stagnated and just been like, yeah, majorly slowed down.
I think the mistake, mind you, it's because of, you know, it's Fox, but perhaps the mistake is trying to make comic book series on the usual 20 episode odd season runs. Well, I like the tightness of Daredevil.
Yeah,
trying to
Daredevil
watch. I mean,
really
I was still not finished the first season of Arrow because it just feels like filler for most of it.
I do feel that when it comes to like TV series, when it comes to box set watching, so watching the entire series, it is easier and more enjoyable to a certain extent to actually do 12 episodes at a time rather than 24.
Well, it's not normal. Well, I mean, it's 20 to 22 normally.
Yeah. It can range up to about 24, I believe.
That hasn't happened for a while. That hasn't happened for a while.
All right, jeez.
I think
oh, my God.
If something's really well written, it can sustain 20-odd, but I can understand how that could be an issue.
Yeah.
Especially with something like Daredevil, which I... one of the reasons I've been enjoying it is that it's a story arc.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
It's like, oh, at the same time as, you know, watching that, of course, you know, I say, you know, we've been watching Gotham, and it's like, yeah, you know, Gotham is kind of just, it's just there at the minute. Whereas Flash feels like something I should have been watching years ago on Saturday Tea Time.
Is that in a good way or a bad way?
Probably a bad way.
Ooh.
As in, it's just not substantial.
Okay.
It's...
Hey!
I just don't really like it that much. It's all right. I'm watching it. But it's
Which
just...
episode are you up to?
I think I'm almost up to date.
Oh, okay. Because I do like the twist. In the first Flash.
I know who... someone is.
Yeah, that was good.
You know who someone is.
Yes, without, you know, spoiling it. Or, you know, anyone. And he's like, yeah, okay. That, you know, that kind of makes, you know, sense and everything. But everything else about it, it just feels very light. It feels very Saturday tea time.
It's very lighter compared to Arrow. It's, I can see what you mean about the Tea Time show, yeah. You would be watching it. A bit like The Adventures of Superman and Lois, about 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But I think that's possibly why
That's exactly the kind of thing.
I'm enjoying it because I like cheese like that, so it's all good.
it's all right for what it is, but I'm vastly enjoying Daredevil.
Well, I mean,
in comparison.
Daredevil, I've got to say. The DC ones was Constantine.
But if you look at TV series with their spin-offs, usually one is darker and one is lighter, so it kind of still matches.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's what's worked well for Daredevil, because they have taken it down that dark path.
But I mean,
it's a lot more mature and darker.
And I approve. It makes perfect sense that someone who would be beating up other people with his fists would do that kind of violence and that kind of damage.
I think it's the production values as well that I've been impressed with as well. Because it is such a high production.
It's impressed me. I've gone in because, like I said, I didn't have any investment in the character. And it's just, it's someone else that they've done. And it's, okay, they've done a superhero series. Okay, let's see how it is. And yeah, I've been quite enjoying it. But let's see, other than watching Daredevil, I have been doing a little bit of Elite, and basically took a trip to Earth, just basically took a few pictures of me hanging over Earth going, hello, Mum, and then I buggered off back to my adopted star system. I'm going to be trading again and you know, buying some weaponry. I've been playing a little bit on the Vita, where cool. I've been playing that Counter Spy.
Oh yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. Which is very good. And
I'm still haven't completed that purely because I'm in a very dangerous position in terms of DEFCON levels at the moment. So.
Yeah, I haven't played it for a few weeks and I went back to playing it and I think I managed to knock up one side's DEFCON level about three levels.
Oops.
In one stage. And it's like, oops, that didn't go as planned.
Planned.
Yeah, whoops. And because they were in the sale, I picked up Retro City Rampage DX, which is triple cross-buy. It's PS3, PS4, and Vita. But because I own it on PC, but I thought something like this will work really well on the Vita. So, you know, I bought it specifically for that. And it's cross-save as well, so you can play it on one and then, you know, pick it up on, you know, home console. Rather than handheld, okay. And you know, continue your save. And I also picked up, Capcom Arcade Classics Remixed, which has
cool.
Because that was about £2 in the sale. Retro City Rampage is £3.20. The Americans got it on PlayStation Plus a few years ago. We never did.
Oh.
So I said, thanks very much, Sony. So I thought, yeah, well, you know, this amount of time later and the fact that we tend to get the same things now, I thought, yeah, I'm pretty safe buying Retro City Rampage in the sale. Yeah. So, it's like, yeah, go on. But I have not played it on the Vita yet, but I am looking forward to it.
And cool. Cookie, what have you been up to?
So, I've been to Venus, Mars, and an asteroid belt in Destiny.
All right, Destiny. Right, okay.
I knew what he was talking about.
No, I've been really enjoying Destiny. I must admit, I've been getting more into it. I'm now level 18. So I can now collect tokens to buy legendary items, which I'm really excited about. So I decided to jump into the Crucible and get some coins and realised how shit I was. I just kept getting killed and killed. But it's all good. So, but no, it's really good fun, actually. It's one of the first games in ages that I'm actually considering buying the DLC for, just so I can unlock some more items and just progress a bit more, which is always not a bad thing. You're looking at that sort of thing. You could tell Bungie's made it. It's breathtaking, some of the scenery.
Is it still basically just a multiplayer Halo?
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of a story to it, and there's some campaign levels to it. Very similar to Halo. But you have got the comparisons to Halo, definitely. But there is a whole new universe, and you get to modify your spaceship and get new plans so you can actually develop other spaceships and stuff, which is a nice little twist to it, which is good. And, yeah, you know, the way you level up and get your own gear through looting and buying stuff and just getting rewards for completing certain bounties. That's a nice little novel twist as well. So it makes it all personalizable, which is good. And you can actually upgrade the your gear as well. So all the some of the guns will actually have upgrades for better ammo capacity and other bits on there. Your chest plate armor, you can upgrade to hold more ammo clips and other bits. Which is good. And apparently after I get past another level, a certain level cap, I'll be able to actually use the currency to actually modify the guns and stuff as well and put other bits together, which will come in handy as well.
Have you been up to anything else?
Yeah, I've been watching Daredevil, which obviously we've talked about. Yep. I've been watching The Flash, which I've already said I really enjoy. And then just to disagree with you all once more, I've been catching up on season 3 of Arrow, which I love. So, which is always good. Fair. Really enjoying the season of Ra's al Ghul. Ra's al Ghul was really made at this season. And the direction that Arrow's gone in because of the actions of Ra's al Ghul was quite nice. Yeah, quite different as well.
Right. What's the difference in direction then?
Da, da, da. Anybody? Hello?
It's gone off. Hello.
I don't know what the difference in direction is.
Neither do I.
It's either that they're not doing Villains of the Week so much.
Hello, I'm back.
Is it? What's the difference in direction? Is it that they're not doing Villains of the Week so much and they're actually concentrating on someone?
You've still got Villains of the Week in some of them, but it's concentrating more on his journey, if you like. Because the Ra's al Ghul story takes Oliver Queen in a totally different direction. He's pretty much forced into a corner to have to take up a challenge.
I have to admit, Ra's al Ghul is not a character I've ever really associated with.
I haven't. And it's taken some of the concepts of how Ra's al Ghul's conflicts with Batman's been in it. Last week, we did have a pit appear. Certain pit, which was put to good use.
Right.
And it has taken some of the concepts of how, of the Batman story, definitely. But it's just, it's become more interesting because Oliver, I don't want to spoil too much, but at the beginning of the season, Oliver Queen's got no money.
Right.
He's lost his money, so it's suddenly, rich boy, billionaire, has got no money to actually do as much as he used to be able to.
Probably all down his couch.
Well,
so far, rather.
his sister's disappeared, and it just builds up to a point where everything is on the line for Oliver Queen, even more so, and he's backed into a corner, and he's got to make a decision, which we haven't seen the outcome of yet, but he started down a path I never thought I'd see him go down.
Okay. I suppose with us, obviously the main thing this past week has been seeing Avengers Age of Ultron, which we've already kind of talked about. Was there anything I actually liked about the film? I liked Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. There we go.
I quite like the Vision as well.
Oh, and the Vision. But that's a thing that we shouldn't be talking about, Paul.
Really like it then?
Well, why? He's not exactly like a secret character.
The Vision?
Yeah.
There's not been much shown of him on TV, though, and no trailers or anything, is there?
But by the same token, you know, there have... I don't want to say where I work, but where I work, you know, there's been, like, big posters of, you know, like, the Avengers and whatnot, and he has featured on the posters.
Okay.
So, well, I hope so if you're going to flog the toys.
Exactly.
So it is...
It's not a secret.
Like, if you're sure...
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I have heard that the Vision, who I have no idea who this is, but I've heard...
What?
Yeah, the Vision. It sounds like a lyric from a Queen song.
Actually does a bit. Oh, what have you done anything? Have I been...
Well, just... Are you trying to steal my thunder?
Yeah.
Don't!
Hey.
I need my thunder.
Pikachu.
Okay. I've basically gone back to one of my old film projects and have started kind of redoing it.
Oh, cool.
So, and today I was doing like some graphics for it and was doing a bit of editing for it the other day. And yeah, it's basically going to be kind of a slow, kind of ongoing process just to kind of improve a film that I made probably about. What, 4, 5, maybe 6 years ago now?
Probably 6.
So, you know, just kind of keeping the footage and just, you know, trying to bump up the production value in it slightly.
Oh, right.
On the
cool.
Post-production side.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, another show that I've got into, yeah.
Lots of superheroes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last week's episode that was aired in the UK, which is One Door Closes, was interesting as different elements antagonistic towards each other finally met properly for the first time. And
yes.
It's not Hydra.
Yeah, and stuff happened with Sky that I'd been kind of hoping for a while, and the series, I'm not sure if anywhere else has been picking up this, but there's been undertones of genocide since during the second half of the second season. So it's just been kind of like, it's just been slowly getting worse and worse, and it's just like, I do wonder if they're using Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at least as a point to show the seeds of why something like Civil War could happen. Basically. Was there anything else? There has been other things. I've inevitably watched more Supernatural. I could tell you about my current relationship with Dave Internet, but that would...
You've got a relationship with Dave Internet?
Yeah, suddenly.
Retroid, go to his house and slap him.
I love a word.
But, so I've been really catching up on Supernatural. I'm still watching season 4 and maybe a certain later season because I was fed up with having to avoid spoilers.
Day and age, it's a real problem if you're not.
It's something to care about. So it's just like, I can't cope anymore.
This is what happens when networks and TV channels kind of...
licensors and distributors.
And basically just mishandle products.
I mean, hell, even if it's just a day or two, you know, behind, it can be a real issue, can't it?
Nowadays,
the entire seasons. But the one thing actually that I wanted to discuss Supernatural moment was that somebody on some website this week decided, or was it yesterday, they put up an article called "I'm a Guy and I Like Supernatural." And basically, which... I need to quote some of this. Can we put this on the screen, Paul?
Yeah. On the screen.
Please put it on the screen.
Hold on.
This guy who'd previously... Do you want to do Control Plus? And you could zoom in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that trick.
Did you? The mouse is alive! The mouse is alive!
It's Metroid's cat, isn't it?
Yeah. A gentleman called Adam Chakarov Chartian wrote an article called "I'm a Guy and I Like Supernatural," and it was this is how he opens it, his article, which went up Sunday. "When somebody tells me about a show that's eluded Netflix recommendations, it's become a habit to first read up on the content and plot. Learning of Supernatural roughly around its fifth season, my Googling session soon followed. Unfortunately, I first discovered a large community of Tumblr followers that chose to ship these guys harder than UPS on Christmas morning. While not homophobic, this was indeed what deterred my interest in this particular series, and I deemed it as a Vampire Diaries clone. Recently, I was asked by my friend to give it a solid try and got completely hooked." And the homophobic remarks and bullshit like that continue. And I'll be linking to this article in there in the notes if you want to read it. But it just kind of gets worse from there, and he really identified with Dean, you know, and all that. And then he goes on to talk about Sam, and he calls Sam a bitch. And then also to follow up that remark, says Sam has had more men in him than any other character on the show.
Wow.
Yeah. That is a really homophobic comment, and it is technically in some ways true, but yeah, he basically spends most of the article belittling much of the female side of the fandom. And basically saying that it's like, it's okay, men folk, it is actually a good thing despite the women folk liking it.
Kind of attitude.
And
that's
it's just
my attitude to that.
But what was interesting was that seeing this link to on two different subreddits on Reddit, the Supernatural subreddit and the Fandom Natural subreddit. Fandom Natural subreddit was obviously completely derisive of the article, because it's, as far as I can tell, it's mostly female fans that hang around there, and non-white cis males, sort of, you know, basically people who aren't the patriarchy around Fandom Natural.
The presumed default.
Meanwhile, Supernatural as a subreddit, the Supernatural subreddit, it does appear to be more sort of straight men. And the reactions were different, to say the least. I get the guy in this article just really criticised shipping, which is obviously fan fiction and art in which characters are put together in ways that they are not in the original thing.
What the hell has that got to do with
it's like, because that exists, it ruined my previous ability to try and enjoy your thing. And it's like, you didn't have to read any of it. You didn't have to look at images.
That's like saying that you hate Sonic the Hedgehog because there's porn of it.
Yeah, but it was also the fact that he seemed to ignore the fact that shipping existed. I mean, God, if he ever discovers all that Kirk and Spock 34. Stuff out there, if he ever discovers, he will, or Riker and Picard, he's going to have
there's Riker and Picard?
Of course there's Riker and Picard out there.
That's the internet, fair enough.
It's like, and suddenly, like, obviously because Supernatural is still quite a popular series, and is the fact that it is mostly a non-male perspective that tends to be heard most about it. But it was just... Oh! So yeah, that was my disappointment regarding Supernatural this past week.
I'll just very quickly mention, because I mentioned it before we started recording, but yeah, there was a recent I'm a Man and I Like Girl Bands.
Oh my God.
Article, and I didn't read it because I basically just table flipped as soon as I found out about it and that it was a real thing. It's like, yes, I'm a man and I like hearing, you know, bands with women in. Is it?
I think the issue is also basically, going back to the TV side of things, it's like, oh, there's shows for men and shows for women and then never the twain shall meet, apparently. Mm. And it's like, you can just have good drama, good telly, good story. It's not gender specific. It's probably the same kind of person that thinks that female comedians aren't funny.
It's probably the same type of people that actually think that black comedians aren't funny, or people of colour persons aren't, comedians aren't funny. And it's like, are you kidding? A hilarious person is hilarious.
Mm. Yep. I mean, there's something to be said for, shared experiences as a point of reference, or, cultural references, which, as Brits, sometimes you have an American comedian and, we might be lacking, a few, touchstone points like that. But, I'm not going to not watch something or not listen to something or not read something because it's, male or female characters whatever. He
managed to insult pronies in this article.
God.
There are lots of My Little Ponies in Supernatural, so it's a natural reference.
Oh, it's because of the fact that it's the whole unnatural fandoms, essentially, as he sees it, because of the shipping. And it was just like, we refer you again, sir, to the situation regarding Kirk and Spock. Riker and Picard, do you not know of these things? They've been there for decades. I mean, come on, the public internet, as we know it, kind of came into existence about 20 years ago this year in the UK.
Yeah, now I feel old again.
So, 95 was really when the internet really started to become a public thing you could buy access to. And it's like, as soon as that, the message, freaking slash ships everywhere. It's not a new thing, and it probably existed before then, if you think about it as well, probably in little zines and stuff.
I'm pretty sure there were fan fiction groups on Usenet.
Yeah.
The only creature that should be in a man box is a cat, and that's because cats love boxes.
Yeah, get out, it's my box.
There we go.
I'm in a box, I'm happy.
I think so, yeah.
That just reminds me of the wonderful picture of seeing there was a leopard and a tiger and a lion and what looked like some kind of mountain lynx, and they were all in boxes.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's my box, and it's like, well, especially, you lot, Mr. / Mrs., Panther, and et cetera, you're fine with that. I'm not getting the box back from you.
Ever.
Ever. It's like, it's yours now.
Oh, but, so that was... I've been enjoying Supernatural this past week, and then I read this thing, and as a self-identified Sam girl, I suppose, technically, his comments about Sam Winchester really pissed me the fuck off. Because it's just like, he's not a kind of bitch. This guy, ends up doing some of the craziest shit in the series and has to deal with being he's the one that has to deal with emotions more than Dean a lot of the time. Dean was already macho, very macho, and could hide behind that, whereas Sam has always been the slightly less macho one and can't always hide things.
Well, I'm less macho. I mean, they're
still pretty both macho. Yeah,
I mean, I've heard the comparison before where it's like, oh, Sam is kind of the surrogate female of the, and it's like, you don't need to have, like, you know, this female male.
Yeah, I mean, dynamic. he does end up in the role of damsel a fair few times, but it's gotten better as the seasons have gone on. Like in the first season, but then he's an he's more inexperienced than Dean at that point, and it kind of made sense first, second seasons. So, but yeah, anyway, I just
don't get why people have to, you know, put up these, you know, demarcations and fence things off and say, you know, it's for such and such. And
yeah,
something we've talked previously about stuff where it's like ring fencing in. This is almost like feeling ring fenced out. You can't go there because, oh, that's for women.
Do you know what's funny is how originally when novels came on the scene in the late 1700s, like they were around sort of late 1600s, but they didn't really become popular until late 1700s, certainly when the Gothic romance became a thing, and this was when the middle class and certainly the upper class was having leisure time, really emerging, and women were the main people reading novels, and men ripped the shit out of them for doing that. Not literally, but there were articles and letters and newspapers about, oh, novels are horrible. Oh, God, the women are reading them. Oh, God, the women are being fucking influenced by them. Oh, God, women like it. Oh, it must be wrong. It must be bad. And seeing the reactions that guys have to things that women like, even today, or girls, it's incredibly sickeningly similar. I mean, the way that everyone treats women and girls who like things like One Direction, Twilight, The Vampire Diaries, True Blood, the stuff that women tend to be the majority in the terms of the fan base for something seems to almost always revolve into distaste and nastiness from the male side of things looking in. Until maybe someone who's a tastemaker or something comes in and is like, oh, actually, it's not the bad. And then suddenly the men like it. So at some point between Jane Austen and Charles Dickens, a man came along and said, oh, no, novels are actually okay. It's all right, you know, just because the women reads them doesn't mean that there's a bad thing. So we can read the novels too. And that is essentially, I would say, how fandoms started out. Women were fans first, and then the men despaired of them, and then they decided they liked the things, but like that the women's liking of the thing was lesser.
Yeah, the men legitimize it.
Yeah,
seems to be the presumption, because it's like, oh, it's only the women who like it. It doesn't really count. Oh, the men like it too. Oh, it must be something worth paying attention to.
That it still happens today, and I'm getting sick of it. You know, however, the like that girls have towards Frozen, seriously, I've watched that thing. Tangled is a better film. Tangled is a better film.
I liked Tangled.
Frozen is crap.
And as a man, it doesn't bother me that I like Tangled. So what? I also like a lot of the Pixar stuff. I will fight you in real life.
But I think after
I won't fight you in real life because I hate fighting.
I think after all these rants, that I think really that is all we've got time for this week. Next week we will be talking about Star Wars. Watch it in the Machete Order. We will be having a link in the article that will go for this episode, and we'll probably say the numbers on that article, but basically, if you avoid Phantom Menace, you're part of the way there.
It's 4, 5, 2, 3, 6.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
I hope. Basically, the 2 and 3 prequels, as soon as you've watched the bit where it's Luke, I am your father, By the way, spoilers.
Well, not literally that bit.
Yeah.
No, take it out right
at that bit.
Allow Luke to just fall down first.
Yeah. So that's next week. So that's all we've got time for this week. So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I am Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. You can find Nerdassemble, of course, over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You could tweet us at nerdspodcast. You could email us at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. You could go and find us on Facebook or Google Plus if you so well choose, on Nerdassemble Podcast. Also, we're available on iTunes or Stitcher if you, are listening to us in a method that you would prefer not to. Which means basically either in the browser or via the RSS. But, there's choices, there's options. That is all. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.